Welcome to Right Away Academy's Essentials. I'm Casey Spencer, and today I'm here with Kathy Larson, and we are talking about reading as a writer. Last week, we talked a little bit about summer reading and kind of
how to engage,
the challenges and how to engage in that. And so this week, we thought we'd kind of jump off from that same point a little bit and maybe give some other suggestions.
Yeah, I think that's I think it's a great place to go.
So, again, just kind of what's made us think about this is that typically kids get some reading that they're going to do in the summer, and they maybe don't know what to do with it. Maybe they've had some real strict instructions, but maybe it's been a little bit more loose and they're struggling to get through the text. So today we want to talk about reading like a writer, which is different from reading like a reader.
Yeah, last
and we'll
week
kind of well, talk about the differences.
Yeah, but. And last week we talked about it as a reader.
Exactly.
We told them to write about their reading, but we talked more. The tips and suggestions we gave you were more specifically related to how you read like a reader.
Mm-hmm. And when you're reading like a reader, you're looking at the story. Yeah. You're looking at what the story is about. You're identifying characters. You are trying to figure out what's going to happen next. You might be predicting things like that. But when you read like a writer, you're trying to figure out more of the how. How does the writer engage me in the story, or how does the writer do what they do, and why do I like it?
Yeah.
And so I thought of this silly analogy today.
Well, let's hear it.
And maybe I just wanted something sweet, but I was thinking about the analogy of when we eat a cookie. So when we eat a cookie, we
did you
taste
bring any
it.
Cookies?
I
for
did
us
not
to
bring any cookies.
While we were okay.
No, and I didn't make any. It's way too hot to be turning on the oven out here. But we focus on the taste of it, and we just simply enjoy it. I mean, there are some cookies. Let me tell you a story. Yesterday, we were at the fair and
eating cookies.
Well, you were at the fair too, weren't
you? I was at the fair.
I didn't see you at the fair. But they had in the products, Carnival of Products, these cookies that were 5 inches around, I think they were, round and looking very yummy. And Jake's, you know, a couple of them caught his eye. We didn't actually get them, but when you eat a cookie, you focus on the taste. You really look for the one that you like, whether it's chocolate chip or sugar or whatever. But if you take a bite of a cookie that doesn't quite taste the way that you thought it would.
Yes. You know what? One of my favorite cookies is a snickerdoodle.
Okay.
And I can tell you that there are only a couple of snickerdoodles that have ever tasted like I want them to taste.
That's weird, because it's just cinnamon and sugar.
I know, but
somebody put something weird in there.
They do. But to your point, I always wonder what's different.
So that would be the analogy of reading like a writer, because if you try to figure out what they put in the cookie
to ruin it,
or with a book, hopefully, to make it better. But it's that secret ingredient that you're trying to figure out. So I have a friend who puts... strangely enough, puts cayenne pepper in her chocolate chip cookies. You don't taste the cayenne pepper, but you taste something different. And the cookie is very good, but you don't, it's not the flavor that you think it's going to be. So you're kind of trying to figure out, why does this taste so different? And I think, you know, sometimes it's, did they use dark chocolate instead of milk chocolate? Did they throw a walnut in there instead of pecans? Or did they?
So instead of thinking or eating a cookie like an eater, you become a baker.
A baker.
Because you want to try and
yes.
do it.
So maybe that's a stretch, but that's
the... I like it. Cookie discussions, never a stretch.
But that's the idea. So as a reader, you read like, let's enjoy the story. We get to the end. We say, oh, happy ending, or oh, that stinks. Why did they make that character die? Or how come they broke up? How come, you know, Pip and Estella are together, aren't together? Do they get married? You know, all that kind of stuff at the end of the novel. But as a writer, we look more deeply at the kinds of why do I feel this way when I read this book? What you is know, it that's happening?
I can give a specific example that has to do with writing. We'll take it from the cookie we'll move on to the writing
to real life.
I participate in the yearly writing contest in my own neighborhood. It's a fiction writing contest, and you can only write 1,000 words, so there's not a lot of time or space to write. And it has to be about our neighborhood or characters in our neighborhood, and it's only open to residents of our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But every year I enter. And this year I wanted to try something a little bit different. And one of my favorite summer read authors is David Baldacci. And he's a kind of a mystery writer. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a whodunit, but they're FBI agents and governments involved. And it's a kind of a page turner. So anyways, I just love the way that he writes. And I decided that this year I was going to try and emulate what he did. And so I actually opened up one of his books to the first page, and I looked at it from a writer's eye and decided that I was going to mimic what he did sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph. Mm-hmm. So I think his first sentence talked about the day. So I took the sentence and looked at the structure and introduced a different day with a different setting type, but the sentences read the same. They had the same rhythm, the same pattern, the same structure. Next paragraph, he introduced a character. I did the same thing. And then he used dialogue to get me to understand that character a little bit, and then talked about the description of what he was wearing. I did exactly the same thing. So looking at it from a writer's perspective helped me realize that the reason I like him is because it's the way that he weaves character development in with the action of the story. And it's not until you really look at it on almost a sentence level that you get this idea of, why do I really love this? What is it? And, you know, makes me think about the kids today who love this fantasy.
Yeah.
This fantasy has taken off in the last couple of years. And I would love, even if we did it in the classroom this next year, what is it about these fantasy novels that are getting these kids' attention?
Right, right. And I think anything that we, at the end of the story, we go, wow, that was cool. Or we laugh, or we cry, or we get connected somehow. We have to try and figure out how did that happen. And I think it's kids who like to read don't always like to write. But if they understand it, the reading from that writer's perspective, they may take a little bit more ownership too in their own writing.
And it gives them another way to look at it, which I think is always, I think in the classroom, we as teachers have a tendency to only focus on reading as a reader. And I like the idea of reading as a writer because it just gives them a more rounded experience with the writing.
Not only that, I think it makes them realize that they can do what these novels are doing. And that it's not as difficult as it is, it's not that difficult. I mean, there still is that craft that they can mimic and then make their own, especially young writers or struggling writers who have a difficult time organizing ideas. I mean, not that you have a difficult time organizing ideas.
No, sometimes I do have a difficult time.
But being able to kind of follow the organizational pattern of somebody who's published and doing it already definitely helps.
Absolutely. You know, let me just go back. Last week I talked about having picked up Dan Brown for the first time, the Da Vinci Code and those texts. And I have been looking very carefully. Something about his writing and the way that he flashes back has been really captivating to me. And so as I read as a reader, I'm also looking at it from a writer's perspective. And it's hard to teach a kid how to flash back in a smooth way, in a fluent way. Because oftentimes they'll say, 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's very obvious.
It's very obvious. But there's much more subtle way to do it. And I realize when I'm reading his texts that I can be another minute in and I'm like, oh my gosh, I've walked myself into a flashback and I didn't realize it. It was so subtle and it was so brilliantly crafted. And so I've been looking out for how he does it. And just as another thing that that you can look for.
Well, and I think it's, I think to your point about that, the reason we say 10 years ago or 2 weeks ago or something like that is because we feel like we need to tell the reader everything. And it's okay that a minute in or two pages in, we realize, oh, wait, I'm somewhere else now. Yeah. It's okay. That element of surprise or that element of figuring something out as a reader is what does engage us. And if everything is so spelled out, often the book does become boring for us because it's predictable. We know what's going to happen next. And I think I think as writers, we have to remember that we can leave details out and still get the story across. So
I guess last week, you know, we talked about how to get through your summer reads as a reader. Mm-hmm. And some of those things include what we're all used to in the classroom. It's the idea of questioning or predicting or trying to connect the text mm-hmm. to ourselves or to mm-hmm. other people. How do we feel? Mm-hmm. Evaluating what's being said. So those are some of the things that we do when you read as a reader.
Right. So moving to the writer specifically, and you mentioned a couple just in your example, but looking at ideas that the writer is presenting. So what is being revealed or not? In the case of the flashback, it's not revealed right up front, but very subtly you figure out, oh, wait a minute, now we're somewhere else or we've flashed back. What types of details does the writer use? And then how do they achieve that main purpose through those different ideas? As they're pulling the narrative out.
Yeah, and I like the idea of using them, like you said, for organization mm-hmm. too. And when I go back to Baldacci, it's this interesting way that he weaves in the introduction of this character mm-hmm. and how it's a physical description right. and how long that lasts and how he ties in an element of what's happening in the environment around mm-hmm. him. And he also has an interesting way of organizing his chapters too. Mm-hmm. So they're only 4 or 5 pages long, each of them. And mm-hmm. each of those chapters ends with something that's a little bit of a cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. And so each chapter then is, let's say the good guy, there's a chapter mm-hmm. and then the next chapter will be about the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And then the next chapter will be about a character that is being newly introduced. Mm-hmm. And you're like, ooh, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. How does that all mm-hmm. fit in there? So the organization is more than just beginning, middle, end, but it's right. how all the pieces work together, right. even inside too.
Well, and we've assigned books like that. I mean, definitely Joy Luck Club jumps around from the different voices of the different characters throughout the book. And I think sometimes as readers, we get a little confused sometimes in the beginning because we're trying to figure out who's talking or what part of the story is now. Kids who might be reading In Cold Blood, same thing. You get the background of kind of before the murder, and then you get the background of the murderers. And then another book I taught at one point, The Color of Water, I think that's the title, by James McBride. And it's every other chapter is mother and son. Mm. And so you get the whole story, but they're parallel stories that are happening. It's just kind of cool, you know. But this organization, there is a beginning, middle, and end at some point, but it doesn't necessarily go beginning, middle, and end. I mean, sometimes the middle and the end are flipped around, and but there's still a story that you get by the end of by the end.
And I want to talk maybe a little bit about word choice too. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to keep using Baldacci because it's on my head right now. Mm-hmm. And I like to teach the kids in the classroom, as an example, let's just say, to not use the word there, the T-H-E-R-E, uh-huh. because it can be replaced typically with something that's a little more substantial, a little more explanatory in nature. And he uses it all the time.
Huh.
It is every third or fourth sentence. Mm-hmm. And
like there are, or there is, or
over there,
like place over
it's
there.
It's,
oh,
it's
interesting. It, like as location.
It and it's a little bit of everything.
Okay.
But
okay.
what I noticed is it's everywhere, and I typically don't think as of powerful writing
would have that.
Yeah, I would think yeah. that it didn't have that.
Right.
And, but yet he weaves it in so that it doesn't get in the way.
Huh.
And so I need to go back and revisit why and how. And so what I realized when I was looking at that is your vocabulary doesn't have to be the $5 word all the time. It can be simple. And if you weave it with interesting sentences, you know, some long ones and some short mm-hmm. ones, and you work on variety, you could really come away with something that's pretty powerful that doesn't have so much vocabulary. You're not overwhelming your reader with too much.
Well, and I think with word choices too, it's working with what
topic?
I don't want to say. Well, I think of real meanings. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes our word choices are not as articulate as maybe we need them or want them to be, and we don't realize it all the time. It's not that you necessarily need big words, but you need to formulate words in a way that captures the moment or the image or the story that you're trying to tell too. And using different techniques, you know, whether it's similes, metaphors, you know, different kinds of figurative language in order to just give a picture to the reader. Because especially if you're talking about a location, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, when we go to different time periods or we go to different places that maybe the reader isn't as familiar with, those word choices are really important, because otherwise they're going to misunderstand the story too. Mm-hmm. You also mentioned sentence fluency, kind of the short and long mixed in along with word choices and things like that. And I think the variations of word order definitely can catch our attention in a text as well.
And using it for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's not just variety mm-hmm. for the sake of variety. It's variety for the sake of purpose.
Yeah.
And trying to understand why did yeah. he phrase that sentence, or why is it only a three word right. sentence? There must be something, some pacing that you're trying to achieve, or
yeah.
Some element of surprise.
Yeah. I was talking to some kids. I think it was yesterday. Actually, it was yesterday. We're working on college personal statements. And I was meeting with some kids yesterday, and this one of the students was writing about an experience playing the piano and learning how to play the piano, and how, you know, it moved from his mom making him play to really embracing kind of some kind of spiritual connection with the music piece. And in his draft, it was so cool because he slowed down time in such a way to make us kind of stop. It was almost lyrical in the mm-hmm. writing, and it was all through sentence lengths. And paragraphing. So he had his intro paragraph, but then all of a sudden there was this almost like a staccato sentence, like it just had like three words, you know, and it was, and then another one that kind of did the same thing. And then it was like intense and it was just one page. So it, by the time you got to the end, it was like, wow, what just happened to me?
Right. Felt like some sort of musical movement.
It was weird. And it wasn't even the end, the bottom line really was how music influenced him to do something totally different. It wasn't even that he was going to be, you know, a musician or pursue in his college statement. That wasn't his pursuit necessarily. But through music, he learned something so valuable that's kind of moving him into a direction that he's ready to take on, you know, in college. I don't think even he realized how powerful those sentences and those word choices were until we started talking about it.
It would be nice for him now to go back to his own writing mm-hmm. and think about, how did I achieve that? Mm-hmm. Look at his own mm-hmm. writing as
Absolutely.
A writer and
yeah.
figure out how we can take that yeah. power and now embed it in yeah. all of the work that he does in his senior year, just yeah. on anything that
yeah,
he has to
absolutely.
Write. I mean, it can be,
it was cool.
It can be really neat.
And it's cool because I think as teachers, we are, as writing teachers, we're always looking at writing as or reading.
As
we're always reading as a writer.
Yeah.
And so those things just jump out at me, and I'll get so excited, and the kids just look at me like,
What?
That's just dialogue, Mrs. Spencer. I'm like,
no.
But it worked. Like, yeah. there's just something, like, I read an example to the class, and they all just stared at me, and I said, well, what worked? And they can't really articulate. They liked it. They knew they liked it, but it was in the end, it was like, well, why was that good? You know, what made it engage us the way that it did?
That's
and
good.
It was a different piece. It wasn't even his. I mean, there was some really good stuff I looked at this week. But just talking to the kids about the writing, I think parents who are trying to help their kids look at it from that perspective will be, I think, not maybe surprised, but I think encouraged mm-hmm. by how cool writing can be when you look at it from a different perspective than just the story.
Which I think goes back to, why does all this matter?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it takes us to, why do we talk about this today? How can you use it
right.
in your own home? And it does go back to last week. And last week we talked about the summer reading mm-hmm. and we gave you tips about how to read like a reader. And if that doesn't work, mm-hmm. you might want to try this.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out how you can take that same book and maybe engage your kids by looking at the writing as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them a new angle and
mm-hmm.
a new perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it might just, you know, light a fire enough to be able to get through
it. But I think it also, I mean, we talk about this. I mean, I think a lot of parents are concerned about Common Core, and there's a lot of conversation about writing becoming more part of the academic system or challenges for kids. And I think it's moving kids in that direction also. So when they do go back to school, they're going to have a little bit of an edge on other kids who don't do that. I think kids who do read, like readers and writers, are going to have an advantage as writers and readers when they go back to school in the fall as well.
Yeah. And if they have never done it before, it just gives them an opportunity to try something new. Yeah. Maybe if they are writers in themselves, mm-hmm. maybe they can actually try some of these things in their own pieces as well.
All right. Till next time.
Right away.